What is up, everybody? Welcome on into April 26th, Sunday, the day after the 2026 NFL Draft. Congratulations, gentlemen, Jeff, Mario, Coleman. You've survived the grueling coverage
we did
of the NFL Draft. It's in the books. The Saints have themselves quite a haul. 8 picks for the black and gold. Looking forward
and
to
one. I keep looking at the draft list and being like, why do I feel like there's a name not there? And it's because there is. You kind of drafted Tyree Wilson.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, we'll talk a lot about that. But
and the Cajun Cannon, actually, Bobby Hebert is considering Vernon Broughton part of this year's class too.
Right.
Throw in another one.
Right. Well, yesterday I was kind of looking around, like, and you add the free agent class to the draft class, and like you said, Vernon Broughton and Tyree Wilson. It's like, You think about what training camp's going to look like. It's like, I can't remember a year, and I've been doing this for like 10 years. I've been covering the team for like 10 years. So this, my firsthand experience only goes back that far. But I can't remember a year since I've been here that there's been this many pieces, and we'll go through the pieces, but like significant players who are either going to have a starting role or a major role, rotational role, that just were not here last year. Like complete turnover. There's going to be players cut this year that are kind of mainstay names. You're just like, oh, yeah, they're here. No. This has been a wild offseason.
You're thinking, you're already gone to down to trimming
the
roster.
I can't help myself. I'll have a roster projection by the end of the by the end of the week.
I thought they're going to tell me by the end of the day.
Well, I mean, I've already kind of gone through it in my head, particularly a wide receiver. I couldn't help myself. It's just like 15 names there. It's like, we're going to cut some guys. But let's go through it, right? Let's go through it. 8 names. The Saints did trade a pick. They traded the 150 pick for Tyree Wilson. We'll go through that later on. But they couldn't help themselves. They had to get the number 219 pick. I want to have a debate with you over whether this constitutes trading down, because I do think that it's important when you consider next year we're going to be able to say it's the 20-year reunion of the last time the Saints traded down, unless you count this one, where they traded the 150, they got back Tyree Wilson and the 219. Technically, they traded a pick for a lesser pick. I don't know. I had a debate about it in the media room. No one agreed with me. I think Mickey would prefer if we did so we could stop talking about it. But
I'm not including it, Robin.
I digress. Draft class. First round, number 8 overall, Jordan Tyson, wide receiver, Arizona State. You know, we talked a lot about this on the podcast, on the show. Were the Saints going to take the risk? Were they comfortable with the medicals? Clearly they were. Going forward, round 2, Christian Miller. I think he goes by Chris. Well, we can start calling him Chris, but his name is Christian Miller.
I think that's what C-Mill even, too.
C-Mill, a defensive tackle out of Georgia. Both high personality guys. We'll talk about that. And then tight end Oscar Delp, another Georgia guy.
Back-to-back Bulldogs,
and also the third set of teammates in 2 years that the Saints have drafted. They took 2 guys out of Texas last year. They took 2 guys out of Louisville last year. They took 2 guys out of Georgia this year. First time they had done that since 2016, when they took Michael Thomas and Von Bell out of Ohio State, both second-round picks. So,
and those two guys, too, have a bond even deeper than the college days.
They go back to 8th grade, right, kind of meeting. All these guys play against each other in like football camps and stuff, right? So then you go into day 3, and the Saints didn't wait long to get another big boy. Jeremiah Wright, offensive guard out of Auburn. You know, kind of a developmental kind of interior line prospect, which is what they need. Again, a people mover, forklift type guy.
Plus, you know how the offensive linemen get banged up throughout the season. You're going to see Jeremiah Wright somewhere along the line because of injuries.
Oh, yeah. I'm
not wishing it on anyone. It's just how it goes.
What everything from the 3rd round on for this draft was is, how can we develop elite depth, right?
Exactly.
So that when someone gets hurt, we're not going into the bargain bin, right? We have a guy that we drafted and we feel really good about who could potentially be a starter. You know, this isn't a guy that's like, maybe they can be a competent NFL player. It's like, no, maybe, okay, Chris Olave gets hurt. Yeah, well, we'll go to that. But so Oscar Delp, tight end out of Georgia, right? So Noah Fant goes down. Jawan Johnson goes down. You're not saying, well, maybe this 7th round pick, maybe this UDFA can step in. It's like, no, you have a 3rd round pick who you have really high opinion of, who has really strong abilities and a physical traits that you can throw in there and potentially, you know, show his ability as a starter. Like,
plus, who's to say Kellen won't use 3 tight ends?
Well, right. He's going to get on the field. But my point is, your replacement level players are now kind of potential starter development players, as opposed to, you know, a UDFA who, okay, maybe they can be an NFL player. We don't know. Anyway, continuing. Day 3, Bryce Lance, wide receiver, North Dakota State, little brother of Trey Lance. So the brothers in this draft class. We got another one coming up. 6'3", 4'3" speed. That kind of tells you those two elements right there.
Right. Your ears already perked up.
Tall, fast, winner. We're going on. But that's a really intriguing one. He's a guy that they'll want to develop. And again, like Chris Olave gets hurt, you're no longer saying, oh, well, I wonder if Mason Tipton can play at the NFL level. You're saying, we got this like really fast 6'3 dude who has really good tape that we can develop in the background. Assuming he makes the roster, that's the big question. It's like, okay, do any of these picks get cut because there's just going to be a roster crunch? Fifth round, Lorenzo Styles Jr. out of Ohio State, the brother of Sonny Styles.
What a family, right?
His dad actually was at school with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, this guy has 4.27 speed, and he said that he probably could have gone faster, but he was dealing with a labrum issue that he had surgery on, right? So he said if he could run with his normal form, he would have been in the low 4.2s. So you're talking about speed, speed, speed. We're not even done yet. Lorenzo Styles Jr. is a cornerback, safety type. They call him... They really refer to guys as DBs now. They don't really kind of break everybody up in cornerback and safety. I think it's kind of like you're either an outside corner and you're a potential starting outside corner, or you're a DB and you can play pretty much anywhere. So he's going to be an option in the slot. He took 200-plus snaps in the slot last year for Ohio State. He's going to be an option at deep safety. He could be an option at returner. Just an elite athlete. Again, he's coming back from a labrum issue, so he might not be ready for camp, but this is a really good developmental option. That was the fifth
rounder.
If
you haven't seen the social media, that 100-yard... kick return that he had for Ohio State.
And it was the first one for Ohio State in forever, which is kind of crazy to think about. But yeah, he was the pick that they got back in the Rashid Shaheed trade. So you replaced the guy who, I don't know, I have always assumed Rashid Shaheed had 4.2 speed. He has never run a timed 40, and you effectively replace him with a 4.27 guy. So really intriguing guy. And then, wouldn't you know it, more speed! Berrion Brown, LSU wide receiver, number 190, the highest LSU draft pick they've taken in quite some time. In the sixth round, number 190 overall, very, very excited to be a Saint. When he did a Zoom call, every like two or three minutes, every 10 or 15 words, he had to like stop himself and yell like, let's go! it was very funny, and I heard him on WWL as well. Like, just very excited, and that's been a theme for a lot of these guys. Just incredibly excited, thankful, grateful. Several of them looks like they were in tears. Oscar Delp, when we talked to him, looked like he had been in tears. Jeremiah Wright was actively in tears when he spoke to the media. And then the final pick, which you got back in the trade for Tyree Wilson, TJ Hall, cornerback out of Iowa, kind of a ho-hum pick when you consider a lot of the other guys. But, you know, just another guy who can compete to be a core special teamer for you. So, I don't know, man. I wasn't sure
like
what
you
to
mentioned.
Expect.
What stood out to me was definitely the speed in this draft that was acquired.
They invested in the offense, right? They looked at what happened last year and they said, this cannot stand.
that's
exciting, man.
We cannot score one touchdown in the first quarter all season.
Well, right. And like you look at what happened last year, and there's a lot to like with how the offense kind of developed over the course of the year with
after
Tyler
halftime.
Shuck, with, well, I mean, just conceptually, just some of the things you were able to get done. Chris Olave had a really strong season. Juwan Johnson had a really strong season. But, you know, I think they're tired of this idea that, like, hey, we're just trying to make ends meet on offense. Like, no, we're going to have a surplus on offense. We're going to have more speed than we know what to do with, so that when guys go down, you're not looking at, oh, week 18. Oh, I wonder if Ronnie Bell can catch a ball. Let's see it. Let's try it out. Samari Toure, do you have hands attached to your body? You can catch something, right? Like, that's not where you're going to be anymore because you've invested in the offense. And, you know, like, I would have liked to see a slot corner, right? And we're going to hear from Mickey Loomis and some more about these picks and why they made them. But I'm okay with outscoring people, you know? I prefer that to a 10-12 game. Let's do it. Let's put some points up.
Like I said, last year, too, was just miserable. The start of games, there were so many times you were just stuck in the mud, couldn't get things going, and they just seemed like the offense started getting clicking after halftime, whatever was the magic juice when they hit the locker room. And it was like, what were the keys? What were the coaches' keys to turning things around? And we've talked about it so much. You don't have time to make adjustments at halftime, really.
No. The athlete's got an athlete, right? And for so long, it's felt like the Saints, you know, they had pieces. They had winning players. But I felt for a long time that the Saints were not the more athletic team on the field in a lot of the matchups you watched.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they just seemed like, in whether it was age catching up with people or whether it was just, hey, you haven't brought in track stars. Right? You know, one of the jokes Mickey Loomis made was like, we could put together one heck of a relay team with some of these guys. And it's true. Like, just put speed on the field and not just speed, but versatile speed, right? Jordan Tyson is 6'2". Bryce Lance is 6'3". You know, you have Devon Vele, who's 6'4". So you're not just, you don't have this kind of lineup of little small fast guys. You got this lineup, you got a basketball lineup now. Could probably get some rebounds out of the deal too. So yeah, I'm excited. I like how this class turned out, even if, you know, we get halfway through the year and be like, man, there's some pieces you probably should have added on the defensive side of the ball. We'll worry about that next year.
Yeah, I think, you know, the biggest question is cornerback maybe right now, looking at the depth there. We have Kool-Aid McKinstry, you know, along with last year's rookie why am I forgetting his name?
Quincy Riley.
Quincy Riley, thank you. I wanted to say Quincy Wright, and I was like, knew that wasn't right.
Close.
Rajon Wright we also have in the mix. But you look at the star role, that's a big question still as well with Alante Taylor taking off for Tennessee.
Yeah, I think you need to add a player to at least compete, even if your goal is to have Julian Blackman in that role, and say Jonas Anker and Jay Reed are your safeties. I don't know. Like, I like Julian Blackman. I think he's a good player. I don't think you can go into the season and say, yeah, I know you've had back-to-back major shoulder injuries, and we're not sure whether you can be on the field for 17 games, but that's going to be our bet, is that you play 17 games this year after not being able to make it through one healthy last year. So I think you invest at least to some degree in a guy who can compete there. I also think Ike Yadam, from a cornerback depth perspective on the outside, is okay. Like, I would love a little more upside as a young developing corner.
Yeah.
But Ike is always the guy for me that when you go into a season with him as the starter, you could probably do better than that. But when you look around the league and you say, hey, I just want kind of a high floor backup,
right,
who can be kind of a key
depth
piece on special
guy,
teams,
whatever, yeah,
right? He's going to be one of your key gunners and jammers and guys in that phase of the game. I think you're okay with that as depth. I want a one kind of young developing corner. I don't think TJ Hall is that.
Plus, everyone always says great stuff about him in the locker room.
Ike?
Yeah.
Ike's a good dude. Yeah.
We like Ike.
We like Ike. I like Ike. Be like Ike. And if, I don't know if they brought back Michael Davis, but last year they had Mike and Ike as their as their gunners. That was fun. One time Phil Galliano went up there and he referred to them as Ike and Mike, and we were like, why did you do that? And he was like, I don't know. I didn't feel like talking about the candy, but we did anyway.
So yeah, the Saints also, we alluded to earlier, traded the pick number 150. Mm-hmm. And you wanted to know if that constituted trading down, that seventh round pick was the Iowa corner and TJ Hall there.
Yeah, I kind of feel like that was just kind of a throw-in pick. And we'll see. Like,
Did you think the Saints might take Garrett Nussmeier?
You know, we'll talk more about Garrett. I feel so bad for
Garrett. It was rough.
I mean, you talk about draft slides, and you could tell, like, when, even when he got drafted, it was like, you could tell that was a rough day. Like, they put the camera on that room. You almost wish they hadn't, because, like, they had a rough weekend, and you feel for him.
But then you look at the sunshine at the end of that is the fact that he ends up going to Kansas City with Andy Reid.
And Jake Haener. And he's going to compete with Jake Haener probably for that QB3 role. They have Justin Fields over there, who will be probably the week one starter until Mahomes gets healthy, assuming he's not
ready
to go.
Which is wild to think about, right.
And then whoever's behind him is probably going to be on that roster, right? Or at least on the practice squad. So he's got to beat out Jake Haener, because teams don't keep four quarterbacks. A lot of times they'll keep three, especially when you have a guy coming off an injury. So it's kind of interesting to see that. But yeah, I mean, from a situation standpoint, he can't be upset about where he went. You just wish it happened four rounds earlier. Because when you're a seventh round draft pick, you get treated like a seventh round draft pick, right? There's literally nothing guaranteed to you.
Well, then we started having that conversation off mic. It's like, as later as it went on, it's like, well, heck, you might as well go undrafted at this point and just get to pick where you want to go.
Yeah, you say that until you are an undrafted guy and you're like, man, you get treated differently as an undrafted guy, right? Like, you're basically on the cut line when you walk in the door as an undrafted guy. So at least it gives you a chance to be in that mix. And
well, that's why you get to pick your situation. So you kind of look at where the ideal spot to at least start as a backup.
It's easy to say that, except they still can say no, right? There's a lot of teams, all 32 teams passed on you. It's not like they're all going to call you now and be like, hey, we want you here. So you may have three or four teams to choose from, and you get to pick your best situation from that. But you probably would have ended up with the Chiefs anyway, given that situation. So, no, I mean, I don't understand it. Like, I guess maybe the back's health where it's not...
the cyst on the spine area?
Yeah, it's not completely resolved. Like, it's not going to be something that affects him, but maybe it does down the road. Maybe that scared some teams off. But, you know, I didn't see Mel Kiper freaking out about this one like he did last year. So I don't know. And maybe it's because Doug Nussmeier is such a diva. Right, like they just teams just didn't want to deal with all the drama that came with the Nuss. I'm just kidding. That's a Shadur joke, but yeah, maybe they'll have a reality show about the Nussmeiers like they have about the Sanderses.
Keeping up with the Nusses, get on the Nuss bus.
The Nuss bus, yeah. It's got a name built in. Let's do it.
We're here on our WWL Saints Draft Recap Show, folks. You can chime in on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, 504-260-1870. Let me and Jeff know what you think about this year's class. We're going to come back with more here from GM Mickey Loomis right after the break here on WWL Saints Radio. Who dat? Getting that groove going this morning here, Who Dat Nation. Tomorrow, we'll let you folks know, tomorrow at 4, the Cajun Cannon Bobby Hebert and draft analyst Mike Dottiglia will have a draft second guess. Will this year's draft class make the Saints a better squad? Call in and give your takes with Bobby and Mike and tell us which player you're excited most about. Saints football with our two Cajuns, Bobby and Mike, tomorrow 4 to 7 p.m. on WWL and the free Odyssey app. After that will be the Jay Johnson show, and LSU baseball has been struggling.
I am not talking about LSU baseball today. This is
I know it's our Saints draft recap.
This is a Saints show.
But the Tigers have
LSU baseball can't hurt us today.
They're in danger of getting swept in back-to-back-to-back SEC series.
Yeah. I already told you what's going to happen, Steve.
The Tigers better
stop teeing me up for it.
Take down Mississippi State today. You'll have that pregame right here, 12:30, WWLAMFM.com, and the Odyssey app. First pitch is at 1 o'clock. We wanted to get into some audio. We've got a ton of it. Yesterday, after the draft, you know what? And before we get into things here, I thought things started out really on fire with the timing of things. The first and second and third round seemed to move by, and maybe it's just me being a cranky old man in day three. They just seemed to drag out a lot more.
No, I don't think it dragged out any more than usual.
It was just more picks.
It's just every year you get to the day three and you forget how many picks there really are, especially in that seventh round. Like the seventh round, the round that people care about less than any other, takes the longest of any. Because there's so many picks, and it's just kind of, especially when you have where the Saints are. I mean, they actually traded and got a pick in the seventh round at number 219, but it was early in the seventh round. So, I mean, you're waiting 40, 50 picks that you're not even on the board seeing who's there. But, I mean, it is what it is, right? Like, that's what the event is. It's not. It was never supposed to be a spectator sport. The seventh round of the draft was never made, or I guess the last few rounds. There used to be a lot more rounds.
Yeah.
But the last few picks of the draft were not intended for television.
And you saw the attendance in Pittsburgh.
It was like 800,000 people.
The NFL is laughing their butts off.
It's crazy. My wife saw the picture that Jordan Tyson took with the selfie, which apparently every time the Saints draft a wide receiver in the top 15, they're going to take a selfie, because Chris Olave had a very similar looking selfie. And she was like, oh, there's Saints fans there. That's cool. How do you get to go? How do you get to be one of the Saints fans that goes to the draft? And I just sent her back a picture of like the crowd. And I was like, hey, they'll let you go. they're not turning anybody down. Because, I mean, you're talking about, I mean, this is like Woodstock out there. Like the crowd is insane. I don't understand it. Like, what are you getting from being the last person in the back? Just because you can say, hey, see that little dot? See that little dot over there?
I would think they have the interactive stations at least around the event, like they did at the convention center here, kind of for Super Bowl.
I'm choosing to believe it's kind of like going to Times Square to watch the New Year's Eve, where they put you in a pen
here.
And you're like, well, we were there, but then halfway through, you're like, can I leave? Nope. You're gonna have to pee where you're standing, because how do you move through that crowd? It doesn't make sense. Anyway. And it's like you're there to watch a bunch of like 20-year-old kids get jobs. But it was nice. It's what has been nice for the Saints the last few years is they made a lot of picks. And whether that is a plan or...
Absolutely, they're getting younger.
They're getting younger, but you know, you don't need 9-8 picks to get younger. Like, you could get younger with 6 players, but I think
with Kellen in too, you're getting his regime, his guys are coming in right now.
I think that's part of it. There's a turnover. I also think there's just a level of the more darts you get to throw at the board, the more likely you're going to hit, right?
Right. Bullseye, baby.
And that's been the issue. Like, I know a lot of people think the Saints are just terrible at drafting, and there's a lot of instances where you're like, man, that was a bad pick. You know, Peyton Turner, bad pick. Marcus Davenport, you know, if you had just taken him at 28 where you were sitting or whatever it was, I don't think it would have been as damaging, but you traded an extra first rounder, went up and got him, and just wasn't good, right? And you have a few others. Isaiah Foskey, just not a good pick. But like, every team misses on picks, right? The Eagles, great drafting team. They took Jalen Reagor one pick before Justin Jefferson. Like,
thanks for reminding me of that one.
But what allowed them to save themselves is they made more picks, right? And they follow the consensus board a lot. They take a lot of high floor players. They take a lot of Georgia players. And so you kind of forget, because there's so many players to kind of throw in and be like, yeah, take that guy out of the equation. You got this guy, right? But when you're the Saints and you're only making 5-6 picks a draft, when you miss on one of those, if you only make 5 picks and you miss on one of them, 20% of your draft was a miss, right? And so adding more names to the equation and feeling like, hey, okay, this guy might not be good, but you know, what are the odds that both of them are bad? You know? And I think that's just a method of drafting that has worked for other teams, and it seems to be kind of what the Saints are leaning into, is throw bodies at the problem. You need to rebuild the roster. There's the more opportunities you have to take a player and develop him, the better chances you have of those players hitting.
After all those picks finally came off the board, we heard from Saints Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis, and he started out things with, Mickey's got jokes.
Well, I didn't trade up, and we drafted an LSU player, so there shouldn't be any questions.
one question. Do you consider getting 219 back in the trade for Tyree Wilson, trading down?
Well, do you guys?
I do.
Oh, come on.
It's a big debate.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you are in the camp, I'm thinking, that considers it is a trade down for the Saints.
Well, I think it's at least a conversation where people are like, it's not a trade down. I'm like, then what is the definition of a trade down, right? You had a pick, you traded that pick, and you got back a lower pick. You also got a player, right? But again, is the definition of a trade down not trading one pick for multiple assets, one of which is a lower pick? Because that's how I would define it.
You also got back a guy that was drafted 7th overall.
Yeah, well, what the counter argument would be is you did not trade for the 219 pick. You traded for Tyree Wilson, and the 219 pick was a throw-in.
A throw-in, exactly. That's how I look at it.
If there was, and you could say, like, okay, if you only traded for Tyree Wilson, the pick wasn't there, it's not a trade down, and the 219 pick is virtually a non-entity in terms of it's basically just a UDFA that you got to sign early. So, like, I it's not really a trade down. It's just a question of, we go into next year's draft, are we going to be able to say the Saints have not traded down in 20 years?
Yes.
Or is it going to be the Saints kind of traded down? Because I think either way, you do have to note it, right?
There was a kind of.
Because
no.
it was a draft trade that you did not trade up. So what is it?
The 7th round pick you got in return was Lanyap. In the deal.
I guess, but like, so what do you call it? Just a trade?
Yeah, it's just a trade.
It's just a trade, but you ended up making a 7th round pick instead of a 5th round pick.
But you got a former 2nd round pick. I mean, 7th overall pick, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I just think it's an interesting conversation, and I was curious if Mickey was going to claim it. He kind of did as a joke later on in the presser, but I think we can still comfortably say the Saints haven't traded down, like in the spirit of what a trade down is supposed to be. But this was a debate that was going on. I don't know. I just like to argue, so that's kind of where I'm at with it. I don't really care. But
point and counterpoint, right?
I am going to make the debate. Like, a lot of times I'll argue with people and they'll think I'm like really passionate about some really stupid take.
You just like to stir.
And it's just like, well, I'm just bored, guys. I just like to stir the pot, you know? I need stimulation here.
Jeff likes friction.
I do. I'm never going to be the guy that just sits here and agrees with you, even if you're right.
Mickey was asked about the high emotions from these draft picks. Jeff, you mentioned it. Day one, Jordan Tyson coming out ended up being like a highlight reel moment for him that everybody latched onto because of how spiritual it was and how emotional he got over it. Then some of the other guys, too. But Mickey, on the emotions from all these draft picks, sounded off about that.
You know, one thing that caught my eye in this last day was, and really the whole thing, is how emotional and passionate a lot of these guys were. I know you guys could feel that on those Zoom calls afterwards, and we certainly felt it on the calls when, you know, we talked to the guys and to tell them that they were going to become New Orleans Saints, and that was really cool.
Yeah, you see the, like I mentioned, the Jordan Tyson moment.
Yeah.
I laughed. Someone tweeted out, I retweeted them, was the fact that my grandma's going to see this and buy 4 Jordan Tyson jerseys.
No, and like that does give you a picture. And I talked to Charlie about this yesterday. Like, I didn't spend a whole lot of time going in on, okay, who is Jordan Tyson as a person, right? Like, in the pre-draft process, I'm looking at tape. I'm looking
medicals.
At highlights, you know, talking about medical history, talking about fit. You're talking about the player on the field.
Correct.
But what you learn in the draft process, and once these players get picked and you get to talk to them, okay, who is this player when he's not on the field? Who is this player when he's on the practice field? Who is this player when he's in the meeting room and behind the scenes? And that's so much of the draft process, and it's so it becomes such a small percentage of all the things we talk about in the months where we have nothing to talk about but the draft.
Because we don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, we could know. But how,
if you cover the team,
how much time do you have?
Team.
Right. How much time do you have to dive in on a prospect that the Saints might draft?
Sure.
Right. You only have time to do kind of glance analysis of every player and what their skills are and what they bring. And, you know, you talk about risk analysis and that sort of thing. But then you sit and you talk to Jordan Tyson. And Kellen Moore described him as a football junkie, right?
Love, like,
his
that.
Passion for the game, how much he cares about the game, how he thinks about the game, right?
Like, all ball, ball.
All ball, all entertainment. You know, he went on a show, like there's a show called Snapback Sports, or it's like a YouTube show.
I saw you repost
and they
that.
Have this kind of like what I will describe as a guys being dudes type game where they just sit on a couch and they flash up players, and whoever just yells out that player's name first gets a point. And it's like, oh, this is Brandon Whedon with the Cowboys and guys like Case Keenum, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, they sit there and play these games all day long. It's just like you go to a bar and that's what you do. You're like, oh, remember this guy? I'm like, oh, I remember that guy. It's like what every dude does when they're just hanging out in a room. And Jordan Tyson went on that show and he won that game. Like, yeah. He won it going away. He won like 8-5. And it's just a good example of like the guy is a football junkie. He loves the game of football. And I think there is a disconnect between, hey, this guy got hurt, so he's soft and he doesn't care, right? But like there are some players like that, right? Like, those players do exist. But there's a big difference when the player, it's like, yeah, that guy got hurt, but it wasn't a product of a lack of effort. It wasn't a product of being lazy. It was bad luck and maybe not understanding what caused it. And now that you understand it, now that, you know, you sit there and you're like, oh, it was my hips are too tight. So I'm going to put the work in to loosen up my hips so that my hamstrings are, my glutes are activated, my hamstrings are getting the energy they need, and I'm not overexerting another part of my body to compensate. And that's all part of being a pro, and that's all part of understanding how to stay on the field. And so I'm okay with a guy getting hurt when I believe that he knows why he got hurt and he's going to do everything he can to prevent that type of injury from happening again. It's a lot different when you have a guy that's like, yeah, I just show up and ball. It's not about the process for me. I'm just that good, you know, and not, no one's going to say that, but that is the case for some people. And identifying who those people are and who are the kind of gym rat players that are going to get better at the NFL level, not just kind of level off, is the key to drafting well. Like, I look at a Vic Beasley. Remember Vic Beasley with the Falcons?
Right.
He led the league in sacks 1 year. Then he's out of the league 2 years later because he didn't have to have a passion for football. He was just that elite of an athlete, right? Marcus Davenport, I feel like that was one of the issues you had with him too. So that's why I really think, like, once you really dig into who Jordan Tyson is, and like, yeah, if he gets hurt and he's off the field constantly, it's a bad pick. But I understand why the Saints felt okay with it.
Well, you teed it up. Here's Mickey Loomis on why the Saints were comfortable with Jordan Tyson's medical history.
What is it that makes a team comfortable with that? Is it as simple as looking at medical records and saying maybe this won't reoccur? How much does a player's attitude?
Yeah, I think it all comes into play. All of it is, you know, all of it comes into play. I think oftentimes you're looking for, do any of these injuries, are they causing problems right now? Are they symptomatic right now? Do they keep, you know, are they the kinds of things that are going to keep somebody from practicing every day? You know, is it a situation where if it's a knee, does it swell up every day, and do you have to have a lot of rest days? What's the likelihood of a recurring injury? You know, one of the realities of football is that there's a lot of injuries in our game. And guys, you know, how resilient are they? So there's a lot of variables.
A plan already to take care of his body, and how can you prevent things from happening again? Obviously, sometimes you can't, but I don't know if, you know, when you talk to him, that is a factor.
Yeah, that is a factor. I think that, and I would say this as, you know, these guys are young guys for the most part, right? They're you know, 21, 22, 23 years old. And they're just learning that, you know, some of the things that they're doing off the field can impact, you know, their availability. And you know, a lot of guys don't learn that until they get to the league. And I think we're pretty sophisticated as a league. Our strength and conditioning and our performance coaches are pretty sophisticated in terms of preventing injuries and doing things that you know, can help you stay on the field. And so we'll help him in that regard. And obviously it's important to him. And that's one of the things that you're looking for. You're looking for guys that want to be on the field all the time. They don't want to miss practice. You know, it bothers them to be in the training room. So, they're all variables that we consider.
That was Mickey Loomis talking about Jordan Tyson's medical history there. And, yeah, you look at what he's been through. I thought it was interesting, the perspective, too, that he gave. We'll hear a little bit later on, not really a hamstring issue, is more like hip.
Yeah. And you appreciate the amount of detail he went into there, because it means he's taken the time and he's thought about it and he cares about it. I also think, like, part of the emotions there were, just think about where he was at. And he spent all this whole process being told, you're injury prone, no one's going to take a chance on you, you're too big of a risk, you're too big of a gamble. I think that's, you know, it's like, okay, bet. Right? Like, now I want the guy who's going to go prove you wrong.
Saints are part of a little sports history. The first brothers drafted in the first round to play in two different sports.
It's not true, actually.
No?
I saw that tweet as well, but it's completely wrong.
Debunked. I got had.
It wasn't even close to being true. It was just like, there was a couple that had different names, but they were brothers. I believe Mark McGwire, his brother was a first-round pick in the NHL, and he was a first-round pick in baseball. That's like the most obvious answer, but it's like, I think they were talking about major sports in terms of major American sports. So maybe you ignore hockey and you say football, baseball, basketball. But no, we need to erase that from our
list, from the record.
It's not true.
I'm going to get flagged for time management here by Mario. Heading to break right now. We'll be back with more sports talk, our Saints draft recap edition, right after this. Who dat, folks? Hanging out here on a rainy Sunday to start. Now the clouds are kind of have that sun peeking through. Good for the Jazz Fest crowd that's heading out to the fairgrounds today. Third day, or fourth day of Jazz Fest, right? Because it was Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
You are correct, sir.
We'll be attending next weekend. How about you?
Yeah, I'm gonna see if I can get out there for some T-Pain.
That's what my kiddo wants to see, so that's what I'm going to take him to do.
I'm going to go home with me. Bye. Anyway, you got it.
I'm just hoping they do the I'm on a Boat song from SNL.
I'm on a boat. I can't say the rest.
No, you can't. We're back here on our Saints draft recap show. Black and Gold getting 8 draft picks, plus made a trade to acquire another guy. So I guess you could say 9 new prospects, players in total added to this roster.
Yeah, added to a roster that also added Travis Etienne, David Edwards, Caden Ellis, and Noah Fant.
Nice free agency haul as well.
Right? So
building, like, baby.
I mean, so many pieces. This is going to be one of the more fun training camps we have. A, in terms of, okay, all these new players out there and what can they do? B, in terms of, well, who is that? Oh, yeah. Okay. Because they're going to be all these new faces that we're just not used to. Like, memorizing numbers is good. Mike Haas is going to have a heck of a time trying to memorize these numbers. But I'm excited for it.
At least there were no difficult names drafted this year that he'll have to get acquainted with.
That is true. And Bobby appreciates that as well.
Are you talking about some of the athleticism in this year's class? Saints Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis talked about drafting those elite athletes with speed, height, etc., all those great intangibles.
Was this a mission pre-draft, the emphasis on getting offensive weapons? Did you expect before we started to walk away with 4 guys?
I don't know that we expected 4, but look, we wanted to add in that area. We wanted to add speed to our team, which we did. I think, you know, one thing, I think we drafted a heck of a relay team, if we want to go that route. So, look, I think there was a little something for everyone, offense, defense, and special teams, and you know, I think that's a good thing for us.
You also joked about the track speed that you acquired today, but is that coincidental, or was that a specific emphasis?
No, I think that probably somewhere in between, right? You always want to add speed to your team. And look, we lost, you know, Rashid last year, and he was that's a big element of his game, and so we wanted to add that. We wanted to add some return ability. We got that, so it was conscious to add some speed to our rooms.
Y'all got a lot taller at wide receiver since last year. Was that a you know, active plan? Is it just kind of how it happened?
A little bit, yeah. You know, size is good in the NFL, right?
Size is good.
And I know he kind of brushed that question off, but they have 14 wide receivers on the roster right now. You know how many are listed under 6 feet tall?
One.
Mason Tipton. Like, think about last year, and we're talking about Rashid Shaheed, Brandon Cooks, Chris Olave, and they kind of brushed off like, hey, do you guys need a big receiver? Now they have 6'4", 6'3", 6'2", 6'1". They got it all. And even a guy like Damian Alford is 6'6".
So now heard that check.
I mean, it's a completely different offensive weaponry than they had before.
Rolling out the break here in our Saints draft recap on WWL. We'll be back with even more right after this, folks. Stay tuned on WWL. That's a wrap on our hour one of our Saints draft recap. Next hour, we're going to get into more with the draft picks and hear from them. Also, Dalton Wasserman, NFL and college football analyst, host of the Preferred Walk-On College Football Show, will join us. Not just talking about Saints, all the other draft picks around the NFL. Also, get into the LSU players that were taken. Hear from us more on our draft recap edition. I almost said Draft Fest, but, you know, Draft Fest continues here on WWL. Now it's time for Top of the Hour News. We'll be back with more right after this on WWL. Welcome on in, folks, to the second hour of our Saints 2026 draft class recap. Steve Geller, along with Jeff Nowak, along with Mario running Master Control, keeping us in line this show. This fine morning turned out to be a gorgeous day right now. Started out a little soggy. Happy for the folks at Jazz Fest, but I'm sure the fairgrounds are a little damp right now, but that's all right when you got the gorgeous weather, some good food, and great music out there.
It's just a preview of training camp, man. Get ready for it. Every day around like 1 p.m., you'll have a freak thunderstorm, and we'll go from there. Although last year, there was like no rain. It was bizarre. It was like Kellen controlled the weather. But what are we talking about again? The draft? Ah, that's right. The draft happened. Whew.
Made it through again.
Yeah.
I always say that to everyone. Congrats
survived.
For making it through, right?
We survived. It's always, oh my God, it's always so wild because it takes me like a full day to adjust because we spend so much time leading up to the draft and talking about the same three things and really not having a ton of information to kind of dig into. And then suddenly in this 72-hour period, you have so much more than you could ever even hope to kind of sift through. And you just kind of have to, you know, it's like, how do you eat an elephant? Like one bite at a time, right? Like there's, you just got to take one at a time and go through it. I still haven't, like, these day three picks, there's so much I haven't even dived into. Like, I need to figure out who the heck Bryce Lance is as a player. Like, I've gone surface level on it, but
you didn't go home and study after the draft yesterday?
I tried. I listened to all the interviews. That's what I typically do after the draft and just kind of remember everything that was said. And I'm excited about Bryce Lance, and I know that's not what we're going to talk about this segment, but like, how many North Dakota State games did you watch? Because I didn't watch any. I didn't even know what channel they'd be on. Although I do dig the Fargo Dome. It is, you know, there's the Superdome and the Fargo Dome, in my opinion, are the two best domes in sports. I don't think a lot of people know that. But that stadium up there is nuts. It's nuts. And I only know that because I used to cover Coastal Carolina, and every year they would be, at least when I was there, they were in the FCS, and they were really, really good. They were like the number two team in the country. And it was always like, man, they could get to the championship, but they're going to go face North Dakota State, and they're going to get rocked. And the Fargo Dome is going to be insane. And so, you know, I don't know. I think that's an advantage when you have to come play in the Superdome, which is kind of a weird environment. Not a lot of college players play in domes. So hopefully that kind of lessens that learning curve.
And looking to build back our dome field advantage.
Yeah, right. And here's the thing. Like, one of the reasons I'm okay with the offensive focus in this draft is, like, I need excitement, man. I'm so bored watching this team. Like, they have not been exciting in that building for so long. And even when they were losing games in 2015, or, you know, they had the defense that just couldn't, you know, they couldn't, oh, man, they couldn't, like, play their way out of a paper bag. But you knew they were going to go in there and score points. They were going to put up numbers.
Sure. Video game
stuff.
And
it's been so long. So long, except for that weird 2-week span with the Derek Carr offense, that they
put up. That was a fever dream.
Exciting offensive numbers, and I'm hoping in my heart of hearts that those days are coming again.
So looking at this draft class real quick again, first round pick Jordan Tyson, the wide receiver out of Arizona State. Then they went back-to-back Georgia Bulldogs, the defensive tackle Christian Miller in the second round. Third round was tight end Oscar Delp. Fourth round pick, day three, you end up getting Jeremiah Wright, the guard out of Auburn. Bryce Lance, who Jeff was just talking about from North Dakota State, the wide receiver there. They traded pick number 50 for Tyree Wilson. We're gonna get it. What's that?
150.
What did I say? 115?
You said 50.
Well, 150.
if
for
they traded
Tyree Wilson.
Number the 50th overall pick for Tyree Wilson.
No, we don't want to do that.
We'd be talking about it a lot differently.
So that was defensive end Tyree Wilson. We'll get back into that shortly. Lorenzo Scott Jr., the fifth round selection, an Ohio State safety, racking up those Buckeyes on the black and gold, have been taken. LSU wide receiver Barrion Brown, we'll get into him as well. It was a sixth round pick. And then in the seventh round, cornerback out of Iowa, TJ Hall. Mentioning with Tyree Wilson, was one of those moments this year during the draft when you're waiting for pick 150 and then, wait a minute, the Saints don't have it anymore. What's going on? I didn't even see trade, you know, pop up. It was just on my draft tracker that I was following. The Saints logo turned into the Raiders logo, and I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah, and the reports came out, you know, I believe it was on day two that they were talking with the Giants about potentially trading for Kayvon Thibodeau.
Yep.
That obviously didn't happen, and I think the reason is, you know, the Saints wanted to invest in a player, but they didn't want to spend big on a kind of a tryout type option that is going to work in, right? Be kind of a gamble like you did with Chase Young a couple years ago. But then you see the price on Tyree Wilson, you're like, I can get on board with one fifth round pick. That because I was talking to Charlie, and it was like, would you trade a fourth and a fifth for Kayvon Thibodeau? Yeah, probably. But even then, you'd be like, that's two players that could be, you know, long-term pieces for you, and you're getting a one-year thing on a guy and a one-year tryout on a guy that you probably will have to pay to keep around. But one fifth-round pick, the number 150 overall pick for a player that you would expect to be ready to play right now and fills a need. That makes a lot of sense to me. So even if he could do absolutely nothing.
Still just 25 years old.
Right. He could do absolutely nothing, and it would be the same as you picking a player in the fifth round. It'd be the same as you picking Rick Leonard. Actually, it'd be less because Rick Leonard was a fourth round pick, right? So it'd be like a DeMarco Jackson.
You would take it in your bag for the Rick Leonard there.
Like this is a DeMarco Jackson caliber investment in a former number 7 overall pick who, if nothing else, is a 6'5", 250-pound elite athlete who can provide some, you know, extra dimensions and is a more ready-built 3-4 outside linebacker than
he apparently
had.
Brandon Staley sees something in him.
No
so,
doubt.
So if he's interested, after he did what Brandon Staley brought to this team last year, all the concern was, oh, and I don't know how the Saints are going to adjust going into a new scheme.
And I will give you one thing, you know, talk what you want about the production. He's played in 50 of 51 possible games over the last 3 years. So he is durable. He is a guy that you expect
availability, baby.
To be available.
Talking about Tyree Wilson, the Saints' newest defensive end here, was a 7th overall pick, like Jeff mentioned, in 2023 out of Texas Tech. 6'5", 263 pounds. Last season ended up with 35 tackles with 4 sacks and also had 2 forced fumbles and forced one fumble and had a pass defensed. 6.5 stuffs. And stuff yardage 4, but anyway.
Also a former teammate of Tyler Shucks back at Texas Tech, 2 years together.
Right, that was kind of one I didn't realize until someone had retweeted. Oh, he put on Twitter. Yeah.
Well, you never talk about the Texas Tech version of Tyler Shuck. It's easy to forget because we talk about him as a Louisville guy. But he was in Texas. He was at College Station for 2 years. Not College Station. That's A&M.
Right.
But yeah, anyway, you get the idea.
Also at Oregon.
Lubbock.
Looking at the pick in Tyree Wilson now that the Saints got in return from giving away their fifth round selection, 150th overall, GM and Executive Vice President Mickey Loomis talked about the trade.
Yeah, look, I think we liked him as a player coming out. He, you know, I think more than anything, Brandon has a vision for him fitting into our defense. And it adds to, you know, a group that we like already. So anxious to get him here. And obviously he was a high pick for the Raiders, and I'm anxious to get him here. We liked him a lot coming out and still like him as a professional.
Is there a chance for him as a stand-up pass rusher?
Yeah, I think we've got a couple of different ideas how to use him. You know, we'll see what in this off season and training camp if that comes to fruition.
Does that change anything with Cam Jordan? Are you still?
No, I don't think so. Huh? No.
Is the 50-year option something you'll have to look at, or is that kind of already decided?
Yeah. I think he's going to be a free agent after this year in all likelihood. So. I know exactly the rule. I got to remember what the final date was, but relative to him, but no. I think he's going to be a free agent next year. So it's a one-year trial, and we'll see how it goes.
Did you go into this draft kind of with the idea of maybe acquiring an edge through a trade, like a veteran player? Is that something maybe like after you took Jordan that kind of crystallized?
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't say a plan necessarily, but we have been talking with the Raiders about Tyree for quite some time. So it didn't just come up today.
That was Mickey Loomis there talking about the trade for Tyree Wilson. Interesting, some notes from there is the fact that when asked about this kind of eliminate Cam Jordan, a possible return for him next year, and Mickey quickly was like, nah, that's not the case.
That it doesn't eliminate it.
Right,
it
does not.
Yeah, it's you know, I was wondering if, you know, if you got through this draft and didn't add a piece at all, that it probably meant, yes, he's definitely coming back. I just think there's going to be an issue in terms of, you're going to bring Cam back, if you do, what's his role? Like, one thing that Cam has made clear is he doesn't want to just sign somewhere and ride the bench. He wants to have a significant role in the defense, and, you know, there's only so many snaps to go around. You know, one of the worst seasons of Cam's career and one of the most frustrating seasons Cam has had in the NFL was in 2024 when, you know, Dennis Allen's defense kind of shunted him to the side even though they were playing terribly. And, you know, he who must not be named as a position coach, you know, Guy McGuy, as Cam would call him, didn't feel like he had a plan for how it was going to work. They tried to have him play interior, Cam doesn't really want to play interior. And, you know, he considered walking home from Carolina that year. Like, he almost walked right out of the stadium with his cleats on.
And for a guy, you know, that loves the game so much, for him to get fed up that much,
right,
things were bad.
So, you know, if he comes in, if he gets re-signed and then he plays 10 snaps a game, is that going to work for him? Probably not. So I think that's the question, is do you have a role for him? Because he's not going to want to come in and just be a cheerleader. And I don't think the Saints really want him there just to be a cheerleader. And so I think that this probably does lessen the chance that he comes back, because again, you're going to bring him back and say, we don't know how many snaps we're going to give you, because you already have Chase Young, you have Carl Granderson. These guys are going to be part of your rotation. Chase Young is your star, and you're going to want to, like, talk about, hey, well, your tryout on Tyree Wilson. Well, what you need to make sure you do is get the data and at least get him out there and give him the snaps. So I don't know. I'd be surprised at this stage if Cam is back.
So do you think Cam's a guy then? The kind of break in case of emergency glass, if there is an injury, you pick up the phone and say, hey, Cam, can you get here down to Airline Drive and work out?
No, I don't think that. I think he's going to be on a roster this year for somebody, you know, and it's just a question of whether he's willing to take a lesser role or a lesser contract. And if it comes down to it, I think he would rather play than not play. Right? I don't think he's ready to retire. He's still tweeting about all the Saints picks like he's on the roster, or at the very least, like a player that's...
He's got a pickleball event coming up, too.
At the very least, like he's a Saints fan. He has a pickleball event on Sunday. That's correct. So I don't know. It's tough to say, but I do think they're a better team with Cam Jordan on the roster.
No doubt.
And it's really a question of what is the smallest role he's willing to accept? Because that's the only way I can see him being back on the team, is if he comes back and is not guaranteed anything. And I think that's what he is against right now, is not being guaranteed anything.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel there is that rotational role for him, but the amount of snaps, it's hard to guarantee something to someone.
Right, like, what if he comes back and gets cut out of camp? I mean, like, seriously, like, because that's the type of signing you'd be making at this stage. If you're signing a guy after the draft and saying, hey, you're going to compete for a spot, competing means you're not guaranteed a spot, right? And if you're only keeping six edge rushers and he's the seventh one?
It makes me think that it's hard for me to imagine anybody outworking Cam.
I agree, and I'm not saying that would happen, but that's like the situation you're putting yourself in is we don't know. We don't know what your role would be. We don't know who's our best option. And if it's not you, what does that look like? That's all I'm saying is Mickey can sit there and say this doesn't affect Cam and his situation. I think it has to. And at the very least, it affects what you would be willing to guarantee him in terms of you're going to come back and this is what it's going to look like. I just don't think you know.
I'm curious to see how this all shakes out. Obviously, Cam, one of those most beloved black and gold members right now. Another right. guy, obviously, we're curious to find out what's going to happen with Taysom Hill. We haven't heard a peep from him, and I think a lot of folks thinking we might have seen the last of his playing days.
Yeah, I'd be stunned if he's back. Alvin Kamara is the bigger question because the Saints did not invest at the running back spot. So I think he is. I think Alvin is. I think that's a signal that Alvin is a part of this team, and I'm excited about that.
We're going to take a break here on our NFL post-draft recap Saints edition. Going to come back. We'll talk to Dalton Wasserman, NFL and college football analyst. He hosts the Preferred Walk-On College Football Show. We'll hear his take on what the Black and Gold's haul was this 2026 class, along with some other thoughts around the NFL. So stay tuned right here on WWL Saints Radio. You can also chime in on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, 504-260-1870. The sun is a-shining, and we are riding things out till 12:30, that's when LSU baseball will be taking on Mississippi State. First pitch, 1 o'clock here on WWL and the Odyssey app. Be right back with our draft recap after this. We're back here on our Saints and NFL draft recap here on WWL. Steve Geller along with Jeff Nowak. We're happy to welcome in Dalton Wasserman, NFL and college football analyst. You can check him out on the host of Preferred Walk-On College Football Show. Dalton, thanks so much for joining us the Sunday after the draft. You have survived as well, and thank you for joining us so early on a Sunday.
Survived is always the word the day after the draft ends, but it's always a whole lot of fun.
Definitely is, man. A whole lot of fun. We're hoping for the New Orleans Saints, 8th overall pick, snagging that wide receiver, Jordan Tyson. Obviously, the question marks are the medical concerns that he's had in the past, but you look at the film and the talent there, pretty exciting addition for Kellen Moore's offense to pair up with Tyler Shough.
Definitely an exciting addition. When you talk about Tyson, I think you talk about arguably the best route runner in the draft and a guy who showed at Arizona State after, you know, some time at Colorado and he was kind of stuck lower on the depth chart. But what he showed with the Sun Devils is that he can take over a game. And the biggest moments when you need the biggest plays, that guy can separate one-on-one. He can get open. He can find holes in zones. And he can make the biggest plays, the game-changing plays that decide football games. So I love it. As a compliment with Chris Olave, you know you've got the deep threat. I love that they added another deep threat in Bryce Lance later in the draft as well. But Tyson is a spectacular route runner. That intermediate range is really where he's going to thrive, and he's going to be a chain mover for that offense.
Yeah, you know, the word that comes up a lot is, you know, twitchy, sudden, and I think that's it's you watch him and you're like, okay, the top end speed, it's tough to know. He didn't run a 40, or at least not a timed 40. But the ability to just kind of change momentum and like reach top speed instantly. You know, I watch him play, and he's obviously bigger, but just in terms of how he's able to kind of glide and then just explode is Odell Beckham Jr. in terms of just the way he moves and his ability to kind of flip his hips. Well, what are your thoughts on Tyson and like how he compares at the NFL level in that regard?
Yeah, I don't know that he's quite, you know, A-plus explosive. You know, when you think about those super twitchy explosive guys like, you know, like Beckham, like a Tyreek Hill, like guys like that, he's not that twitchy, but the word for me is smooth, man. I mean, yeah. The approach and just the ability to get in and out of cuts, you mentioned it, the ability to decelerate is just as important as the ability to accelerate and, you know, get to your top gear, right? And I think his top gear is probably good, right? High 4.4, maybe low 4.5, and somewhere in that same range as Carnell Tate. But I think when you look at the way Tyson gets in and out of breaks, it's so sudden, and he understands how to set up defensive backs, how to get in the blind spots, how to really get on their toes when it comes to, you know, guys are in off coverage, they're protecting against vertical routes, but he eats up that space quickly, and then he understands how to accelerate and manipulate defensive backs. So you really look, you watch his, you know, there's some of the highlight reels and things like that. Every player's got him, but when you watch him on a down-to-down basis and just his approach to route running, it's so much fun to watch. It's the right combination of a little bit of twitch, and I think it's really smooth and cerebral at the same time.
Yeah, I always get the impression that that his like number one goal on every play is to embarrass the other guy as much as possible. You know, but again, it's kind of flipping to another pass catcher that the Saints added that doesn't really have a lot of tape because Georgia didn't really use him. Is tight end Oscar Delp. I think he's kind of the ultimate guy who you watch and you're like, man, there's talent there. There's ability. And then you go to the tape and you're like, you go to the stats and you're like, wait, did I type the name in wrong? You're telling me this guy has never had more than 24 catches in a season? He's got 70 catches in 4 years at Georgia. Like, why doesn't the production match the tape? Curious, what are your thoughts on Delp and how he projects to the NFL as both a blocker and as a pass catcher?
Yeah, I'll be honest. Through this process, in a vacuum, I'm not Oscar Delp's biggest fan like some in the draft community, but I really like this fit with the Saints, right? Get him in that more movable number two role behind Juwan Johnson, right? And I think when you look at what he had to do at Georgia, especially after Brock Bowers left, he was left in line a lot. You know, he's an athletic, faster guy who can really win in open space, but I think he's a good enough blocker, right? He could put a little bit more size on, but having that experience of playing in line allows Kellen Moore to put him in traditional roles, and having Juwan Johnson, who's been there obviously for a long time, you can move Delp all around the formation. The one thing that would excite me about Delp and the open field speed that he has is that in this offense that I would assume Kellen Moore would want to get into more of the RPO game and a lot more underneath throws, right, with more of these weapons, you know, at his disposal. I think Delp can be one of those guys. If you look at the way he used to use his tight ends even in Philadelphia and just constant, you know, like with Dallas Goedert, just underneath throws, RPOs, easy yardage for the quarterback, right, confidence builders, things like that. I think Delp, if you lose him in open space, he can be a real problem, and they have the maneuverability now with all these new weapons in their offense to use him in that manner, right? So really, Georgia, they never really used his athleticism to their full advantage. I think Kellen Moore is going to find a way to be able to do that.
Now, Delp was the second Bulldog of back-to-back Georgia players taken for the Saints here. In round two, they end up with defensive tackle Christian Miller. Big boy for the middle for them. What was your overall take of his tape?
Oh, he's awesome, man. I'm telling you right now, this is just a player. He doesn't put up the flashy stats. You're probably never going to get, you know, 10, 12 sacks out of him or anything crazy like that. But this is somebody who makes your football team better. He makes your entire front seven and all the guys around him better. Monster in run defense, right? And a lot of people see him as just a nose tackle, just a guy that's going to play in the A gaps on either side of the center. I don't think that's true. I think the way that he can move across the line of scrimmage from tackle to tackle in run defense, especially, he's going to be a real problem for teams now trying to run on the Saints. They've been kind of weak on the interior for multiple years now, but he's a guy who can really plug those holes up front. I think Brandon Staley getting into different defensive fronts, if he wants to go to a four-man or a five-man, I think Miller fits in any which way. It's one of my favorite picks in the entire draft, to be honest with you. I thought he would have been a great fit there. I think his flexibility, I think the run-stopping ability is going to help this team big time, and especially free up those linebackers behind him, because these offensive linemen have been getting too much free access to the second level when they play the Saints the last couple years. Miller, honestly, he's the Saints' favorite pick for me. He's my favorite pick, I should say, for the Saints in this draft.
Yeah, and it was an interesting draft for the Saints because they went so heavy on offense, but then it's like they did that Christian Miller pick really is intriguing. I'm curious, you know, just looking at their overall class, I'm curious, what would the grade you put on it be? It's obviously a little early. We haven't watched any of them play, but just kind of on the whole, the eight picks, and I feel like you kind of do have to lump Tyree Wilson in there to some extent just because they traded the number 150 pick to get him. But what are your thoughts just overall on the class the Saints brought in?
This is a really good class. I'm going to be honest with you. I'll probably give this somewhere around an A-. I think somewhere in there. I love the Tyson pick as long as he's healthy. I love the Miller pick. Delp maybe was a little high for me, but that's kind of my personal opinion. But he's still a good fit there. And then even some of these day three guys, man, Jeremiah Wright, Bryce Lance, Berrion Brown to go back there and just even just return kicks is a good value in the sixth round. I'd probably give it somewhere around an A-. And if we knew that that Jordan Tyson would be healthy throughout his career and he's going to be fine, that might even be up to an A. I think the Saints had a really, really good weekend.
When we look at the division, Dalton, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, curious your thoughts on Reuben Bain Jr. Short arms or not, I'm not happy about having to face a guy that's a pretty ticked off twice a year here in the division. Just overall, I know the tape doesn't lie on him either, but what are your thoughts on Reuben Bain Jr. and that short arm, I guess, stigma that's surrounding him coming into the NFL?
look, I know it's an outlier, and I know every year we've got a short arm guy now. It was Will Campbell coming out of LSU last year. It's Reuben Bain this year on the other side of the ball. Reuben Bain's a spectacular football player. To be honest, through most of this process, I thought these teams would be foolish to let him out of the top 10, and he got all the way to 15, and he's the – you're right, you're going to hate facing him twice a year because he's the perfect player that Tampa Bay needed. You know, he's got the short arms, but I haven't seen anybody in this draft who knows better how to overcome that with his technique, with his hand placement. His lower body is just incredibly strong. It's unbelievable that he can even kick down inside and play the run, head up over tackles and things like that. It was one of the best picks in the entire draft, maybe the best pick in the entire draft, considering they didn't even have to trade up to get him, and it was exactly what they needed in the right time. This kid is so well coached. Jason Taylor, obviously Dolphins legend, was his defensive line coach down there in Miami. Nobody is better coached right now for the NFL game at that position than Reuben Bain and even his teammate Akeem Mezidore.
Well, what I appreciate most about him is he's all football. He didn't even get a haircut for the combine. He goes by, he walks past that like posing mirror that everyone takes their time and looks in.
Just give me the hat.
Snatches the hat off the table. I'm going to the podium. Look, we're not messing around. Like you have to appreciate that about a player. And just kind of looking around at the draft as a whole. Give me some of your favorite picks, maybe your favorite classes, maybe favorite combinations of guys that ended up somewhere. Like, what are some of the things that stood out for you throughout the course of this draft?
I mean, we knew it coming in, but it's such a heavy defensive draft class. I think just the shortage of offensive playmakers really pushed some of the guys early at the top, but this was a defense-heavy draft class. If you needed to fix your defense like certain teams, one that sticks out at me, I thought the Dallas Cowboys had an unbelievable draft. You talk about, you know, they get to trade up one spot, the Dolphins pass on Caleb Downs, and they get a guy who, to be honest, was number one on my big board. Caleb Downs is as good a safety prospect as you're going to get. I think he can change the complexion of the Dallas defense. Malachi Lawrence, Jayshon Barham both off the edge. Devin Moore in the fourth round at corner. I thought Dallas was awesome with what they needed and how they needed to fix their draft. And then, to be honest with you, we don't give this to them a lot. The Cleveland Browns, man, you talk about supporting whatever quarterback they're going to have and stacking up, especially on the offensive side of the ball. Spencer Fano, a left tackle. Two good receivers who both could have gone in the first round with Casey Concepcion and Denzel Boston. Then you get a value like Emmanuel McNeil Warren at safety, too. I'm telling you right now, if the Browns, you know, and I again, this is always the butt of the joke here that we get to, but if the Browns are to turn around their franchise in the next couple of years, I think this draft is going to be a big reason. They did a fantastic job.
Wow, finding positive spots for the Cleveland Browns. Yes, indeed. Dalton, too, one last one about quarterback Garrett Nussmeier. Man, oh, man, what a tumble for the poor kid. I thought he was going to definitely be a day two selection. Ended up being a seventh-round pick. Were you hearing anything more about why he has, you know, was such a dramatic fall from being at least a mid-round pick and then going in the seventh?
Very strange. Very strange to me. I had him as the third best quarterback in the draft. I thought that round three, maybe early round four range is where he would have gone. And, you know, when you talk about the pedigree that he has as Doug Nussmeier's son, the arm is plenty good enough when he's healthy, right? It doesn't, not a great athlete and doesn't bring great tools, but man, there was a lot to work with there. I thought we'd be talking about a guy who, okay, sit for a couple of years and then maybe we see if he has decent starting potential, but shocked. And I think when you look at, you know, draft analysts throughout NFL media and they're looking at Nussmeier going, there's got to be something else at play here. There's got to be something, or teams just don't believe in his tools. I mean, honestly, when I see guys like Baron Morton and Ethan Kalik-Manis and certain other guys go ahead of Nussmeier, I'm like, what is going on here? This just doesn't feel right to me. Maybe they're worried about the injuries and the size and the way that he was banged up this past year, but he's a way better player than that. And honestly, he gets to sit pretty comfortably learning with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. We'll see how he develops behind the scenes, but him dropping to the seventh round is not something I had. I had him as the third best quarterback in the class.
Yeah, there was a point where I felt like they were picking Madden creative players before Garrett Nussmeier. And you know, I guess if I'm looking at that and I'm Garrett, I'm looking over at Brock Purdy and I'm saying, you know, no one believed in that guy either. He found a way. And you know, Brock was literally the last pick in the draft. And so my last question for you, and Garrett's off the table because we already talked about it. Who's the seventh round pick in this draft if you have one? That you feel like is the steal of the seventh round.
Oh, you're making him dig deep.
I am making you dig deep, but I trust that you've got an answer for me.
Let me see here. Let me dig through, because there's always names that sneak in at the end that you just go, that guy should not have, you know, that guy should not have fallen that far. You know,
right? Because that late in the draft, you're so exhausted at looking at things, you kind of miss some.
Can I cheat and take two guys for the same team? I'm going to take two guys.
Go for it. Absolutely.
That I think have a shot.
We'll allow it.
Look. We're going to look up here at the Cincinnati Bengals. Two guys, tight end Jack Andrews out of Texas, is a really solid player. Had a better 2024 at Cal than he did this past year at Texas. And the Bengals, to me, are always, you know, they're looking for those traditional tight ends who can catch the ball, too. He's got really good hands. I thought he could have been around 3 or 4 pick. And then the defensive tackle out of Navy, Landon Robinson. I'll tell you what, don't sweat the fact that he went to an academy school and he played group of five football and all that. This kid's a really good athletic football player playing on a team that needs defensive tackles, even beyond Dexter Lawrence in the worst way. I think since he got two good ones there, Jack Andrews and Landon Robinson.
Man, host of the preferred walk-on college football show, Dalton Wasserman, joining us there with that wealth of knowledge. Thank you, man. Besides the coffee, you were a shot of injection of energy for us today.
Absolutely. Appreciate you guys as always, man. And hey, in a little bit on preferred walk-on today, we're going to have our 2027 way too early mock draft first round, myself and Max Chadwick. Check that out when you get a shot.
Love it. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you, man. That was Dalton Wasserman, NFL and college football analyst, host of the Preferred Walk-On College Football Show. You can follow him on X at CFB_Dalton, D-A-L-T-O-N. Really great wealth of knowledge there, breaking things down. And you heard how excited he was, too, over the prospect of Jordan Tyson coming into this offense.
No, and again, I think he said it there. It's like, yes, there's injury concerns, there's whatever. It doesn't really matter anymore. We're past talking about value, we're past talking about gambling, and it's like, okay, what if he is on the field? And the answer is, if he is not a guy that's constantly in the training room, you stole him at number 8. He's a steal. He's the best wide receiver in the draft. And from this point on, it's no longer about should they draft him, it's what exactly are they going to get out of him? And I think the Saints are very excited. I think fans will be very excited when they see him out there.
Yeah, with now Jordan Tyson, Chris Olave, and you would think you put at number 3 Devon Valet. It's a pretty interesting wide receiver trio.
Has to be Valet. Just from a he's just a big slot. He's a guy who can fit in there. And if you want to get a little more speed on the field, then you turn and you look at, hey, okay, Bryce Lance, and you got a Jalen Polk in there too. Like, there's that wide receiver battle in camp is gonna be a show. Like, it's gonna be a movie, and I'm looking forward to it.
Taking a break here in our Saints Draft Recap Show. You can chime in the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870. If you're not enjoying Jazz Fest, enjoy our Draft Fest Recap here on WWL after this. We have returned to our Saints and NFL Draft Recap here on WWL. Steve Geller along with Jeff Nowak. And Jeff, we've been talking about the Saints draft picks. We also got a new draft pick right here at WWL.
Nice. I like what you did there. Explain. Elaborate, Steve.
Helping us here in studio today, and actually he's been cranking it out to all draft weekend, part of the crew. Joined the madness at the perfect time, I guess, starting right in the NFL draft, birth by fire. Mario Jerez here, part of Team WWL now. Mario, how you doing, man? You hanging in there this morning?
Yes, hanging in there. Busy weekend, but had a lot of fun. Y'all did a great job enjoying all the discourse this morning.
Yeah, I can't think of a less hectic time that you could have joined. I mean, you know, it's like going straight to 11. But yeah,
it's like someone joining just when the LSU was in a super regional.
Yeah, that is true. That did happen. But that happens a lot. So,
Mario, I know for you, you do play by play for Spanish radio. You know, on your breakdown of this black and gold team, you're constantly studying them and looking at things. What were your overall impressions, I guess, from their draft haul in 2026?
I like the class, to be honest with you, man. I agree with Jeff's point about the wide receivers. I like the fact that they went and got 3 of them, and you have a lot of options at returner now too, which I think can really benefit this team. And I was a little bit surprised that they waited until the 7th round to go cornerback, but maybe that tells you they feel better about the guys in that room than a lot of us do. And all in all, I thought it was a really good draft. Tyler Shough's going to have some new toys, like y'all have been saying, and looking forward to see how these guys contribute.
Yeah, I agree with your point there. It's like cornerback is a very thin roster spot on this, or thin position on this roster. And TJ Hall, you know, I don't know if he's going to be the answer there. I wouldn't be surprised at all if that's the position that we see the Saints kind of go in free agency the rest of the way. Like, there's going to be one or two signings. They've only brought in, I think, 8 UDFAs at this point, so there are a roster spot or two there. But I don't know if I think there's another shoe to drop at cornerback.
I agree. And the young guys there, I think, are both improving with Riley and with Kool-Aid McKinstry. But I would like to see a veteran guy come in as well, not just to provide some depth, like you're saying, but also to kind of usher those guys into the NFL even more.
What are your thoughts on the Tyson pick?
I like it. I know people are concerned about the injury history, which is valid, but I think he's the best wide receiver in the class in terms of talent. He could play anywhere on the field. And as good of a season that Chris Olave had last year, it still feels like the Saints can use him more efficiently. And I think bringing in Jordan Tyson can definitely help do that. And Mickey Loomis, going back years, I mean, think of one of his first additions as general manager when they brought in Drew Brees. The injury history doesn't scare him off all the time. And more recent examples, we saw that with Marshawn Lattimore, who had injury issues coming into the NFL, Ryan Ramczyk as well. No, it didn't end well for him with the injuries, but still more than worth the pick. And clearly the Saints think he can come in, be a star, and I really like the pick despite the injury history.
I think what this year shows you more than anything else is how much easier drafting gets when you feel like you have a quarterback.
Right.
When not only you feel like you have that guy, but you feel like we want to get that guy weapons. Well, we can find that guy weapons now that we have that guy. It's a lot harder to spend three draft picks on wide receivers when you're like, can the guy at quarterback actually throw to these guys? Like, do we have the passer to use the pass catcher? And it's like drafting on easy mode. And I said, made the same point when we talked about free agency, like, oh, free agency gets a lot easier when you have cap space and a quarterback. And I feel like the draft is just an extension of that.
Mara, you're a play-by-play guy, and you look at, you know, with the additions to the roster, luckily no hard names, obviously, to learn this year, but how long does it get to be comfortable with knowing the new numbers when they're assigned?
It takes some time, you know, and sometimes that varies throughout the season. You got to pay attention to stuff like that. But I do have to say I love the two Latino names that we drafted. With Oscar and with Lorenzo, we're definitely going to have a lot of fun with those guys.
Nice.
Yeah, you know what? I've just got to say, sometimes the Spanish radio calls or even the other language calls end up being better than the English calls.
My favorite call of all time of any sporting event ever is the German
Shy Tuttle.
The German call of the Shy Tuttle stiff arm on Matt Ryan.
Right.
And it's because you don't even need to know what they're saying to know what they're saying. That's what makes it so beautiful is
you feel it.
The energy,
yeah.
and the just experience of the call is almost better because you don't know exactly what's going on, but you do at the same time. Like, that's what makes it so perfect.
Yeah, I love that you brought up that clip, because in that clip you hear like so much that you don't understand, but you hear the stiff arm, like stiff arm.
Interception!
Yeah, like some terms in football are universal.
Yeah.
And if you
yeah.
listen to the Spanish broadcast, you might not understand like 9 out of 10 words, but certain terms you are going to understand.
And then, yeah, when the stiff arm happens and Matt Ryan goes down, we all understand the giggle as well.
Yeah, just the maniacal laughter.
Right.
I actually found that clip. That's like one of my claims to fame as being down here, is I unearthed that clip. And then I talked to Bjorn Werner about it, who was the guy on the call for that. And it was like,
oh, wow.
Yeah. And it was just funny because he was just like, yeah, it was at 4 a.m. when that happened in Germany. Like, they were doing that in the middle of the, that's part of the reason that they were just like punch drunk laughing, is because it was quite literally 4 a.m. when that play happened in Germany where they were calling it.
Well, welcome again, Mario. Can't wait to be working with you and delving into more black and gold coverage.
Thanks, Steve. Pumped to be working with you guys as well.
Yeah, man. Great stuff.
WWL Saints Draft Recap rolling on here. We're taking a break, coming back with more as we get ready for LSU baseball versus Mississippi State. Game 3 coming up, 12:30 pregame coverage, 1 o'clock first pitch on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Be right back after this. Our Saints Draft Recap show is getting closer to wrapping up. We got about 30 minutes left. We're going to go to our top of the hour news break. When we get back, we'll talk you up to LSU baseball taking on Mississippi State in Game 3, a 12:30 start. First pitch at 1 o'clock on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. The Bayou Bengals struggle bus right now in Stark, Vegas, looking to avoid that SEC sweep against the Bulldogs. We'll come back with more of our Saints Draft Fest recap right after this at the top of the hour news break here on WWL. Who dat, folks? Welcome back into our Saints 2026 draft recap. The Black and Gold made 8 selections yesterday in the NFL draft. We've been talking a ton about them. Gearing up for 2 LSU baseball coming up 12:30 here on WWL. First pitch at Starkville will be at 1 o'clock, AMFM.com in the Odyssey app. One of the draft picks we gotten into, Christian Miller, the Saints' second round selection out of Georgia. Man, oh man, big beef for the middle of this defensive line. Definitely a guy was much needed and happy he was still around when the Saints were on the board in round 2. After the draft, when he was selected, he joined the Saints media via Zoom call. Here's a little bit of what he had to say. Very big personality, you'll see, along with the big body, here from Christian Miller.
How much have you talked to this team, thought about this team, and how do you like the fit?
Man, to be real with y'all, I talked to the Saints at the Combine. We had a great interview. They challenged me a lot. Very challenging. Stood on 10. I love it. They challenged me. It kind of felt like Georgia being in that room. They were on the same defense like Georgia, so it's a no-brainer. Day one, easy learning, easy cleanup. And, we really talked the whole time. Like, we barely talked. That's why I was just like, it was a happy surprise. I'm like, dang, I'm going to the Saints. Let's go.
During the draft process, you said that running through somebody's face was your favorite part of the pass rush. What else do you like when it comes to your style of play on the interior?
Man, I just like being a Swiss Army knife. I feel like anything my coach tell me to do, I can do it. From being dominant in the inside at nose, from being dominant at the three-tech position, dominant at the 4-eye, dominant at the 5, I can just do everything. And I think I just bring that versatility to the game. And just my mindset, I think my mindset is just second to none. I think I got the best mindset in the class in terms of just like I want to run through somebody's face. I seek physicality. I want physicality. And that's just what I was taught. That's how I always been. And that's what I'm on. That's what I live by.
Christian, you've been down here for the Sugar Bowl. What's your thoughts on the city and the fan base down here?
Man, I love the city. I love them glazed beignets. I got to stay away from them, though. I gotta stay away from them. I'm going to kind of just portion that out a little bit. But I love the city of New Orleans, man. It's a city of camaraderie. I think the whole city come together. I was just telling one of my homeboys a couple weeks ago. I said, man, next year, I cannot miss Mardi Gras. And guess what? I'm going to be down there. So it's perfect. I'm going to be right there in the building. But it's just the culture down there. It's special. It's not like nobody else. What they building is special down there with the Saints. And I get to play against some dogs in that conference, and I get to play with Brian Brzee, so I'm excited.
You said the Saints challenge you. How do they challenge you?
They just want to see where my mind was at. I think the Saints is a very they're big on mentality, and I think that's why I'm here. No thanks. I know that's why I'm here. Mentality. I think they want to see where my mentality was at. They want to see can I withstand hard conversations? Can I withstand hard topics? Can I take hard coaching in that meeting room? And I think I stood on business. And I think that's just who I am as a person. I want to be coached hard. I want to learn. I seek learning. I think that's just what I bring to the table. And I think that's what they value that. They value me at.
Chris, you playing for Kirby Smart and the SEC. How did that prepare you for this?
Man, just playing for Coach Smart prepared me each and every day, man. Coach Smart, when I he only but 5'9", 5'10" on a good day, and just a fireball, crazy passionate, and he wants his guys to show up every day and be ready to learn, be ready to bring that intensity, and just be ready to win. I think not only winning on the football field, but winning in life. And I think that's what he brought into the culture of Georgia. That's what he brought into us. And I feel like just having him in the coach, it kind of challenged me, especially as a freshman. He challenged me so hard every day. And I think that's why I am who I am right now. So, man, it's nothing but a blessing for sure. Nothing but a blessing.
Mister, obviously, your bio, your snapshot always says, you know, run stopper first. How true is that? That's an elite trait for you. But how much better do you think you can get at the other aspects of the game?
Man, I think I can get even more better at run stopping. I think I got to make all the plays that come to me. I got to go through the process more. I got to go through my first gap, go through my second gap, and go make the plays. And I think I ain't even reached my potential yet. I'm just scratching the surface. I got so much more in the tank. I got to get better at run stopping. I got to get better at pass rushing. I got to get better at a lot of things. But one thing I do bring to the table is just that mindset and that camaraderie, being a good teammate, having a good mindset, and just wanting all the smoke. That's just me.
Your high school team is the Saints?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It's crazy. Ain't that crazy? Ain't that crazy right there? Hey, God working mysterious ways. Look, I give it all to him. That's crazy. Cedar Grove Saints, New Orleans Saints. That's crazy. That's crazy.
Like I mentioned, big guy, big personality there. Christian Miller, Saints defensive tackle out of Georgia. And Jeff, one thing right away reminds me of just hearing him speak, that personality. Kind of like a Cam Jordan kind of attitude he brings.
I would say Colin Saunders. I think he's a little more of a bubbly personality. Like Cam is an entertainer. I think this is, you would say the same about him. And I'm not saying they're dissimilar, but one thing about Christian, he went to Georgia and wanted to be a theater kid. Like he's a theater kid. He wanted to be a theater major, and they were like, that's just not going to work, guy. Like the time is not going to allow you to go to rehearsal. You are a football player first.
Post NFL career. There you go.
And that was a bummer for him. But you know, he ended up being a housing management major. But it does tell you, like, there's a reason he's the elocution, like the way he's able to command a room. it's impressive. And you can see, like you talk about, okay, who are the team leaders for this team long term? It's not hard to see a future where this guy is one of the leading voices in that defensive room. Because there's guys have got to step up. If Cam is back or not, like there's going to need to be leadership voices in that room, and I think he could be one of them.
We're stepping away here on our draft recap show. When we get back, we'll do a little bit of an update on the undrafted rookies that the Saints have brought in. And before we head you off to LSU baseball versus Mississippi State, we're going to come back right after this, folks, on WWL. We've been breaking down the Saints' eight-player draft class along with the trade they made, as well bringing another guy in. So technically nine players in the NFL draft the Saints acquired. But also, after the draft, Mr. Nowak, you were a busy man because of all the undrafted free agents. So while I was getting ready to just chill out on the couch watching some LSU baseball, you were writing up stuff about undrafted rookies being signed.
I wouldn't say I was that busy, but it is a thing. You do it every year, you know. And this year was a little different because, you know, this is 18 picks in 2 years, 17 picks in 2 years plus Tyree Wilson, right? So you have a lot of players already on the roster. I think they only had about 10 roster spots. As far as like verified reports, there's only eight players that I've seen signed as a UDFA. There are a couple in for tryouts. I'm not going to list them, but they'll be guys to watch when rookie minicamp comes. Because,
right,
you know, a guy like, for example, Terrell Burgess was here for a tryout last year, and he ended up having a significant role. Hey, Donovan Peoples-Jones, he was here for a tryout. He got signed, but then disappeared off the face of the earth. But the players they have signed,
I think you got into the UFL, right?
As UDFAs. I don't know. You're going to have to look up your DPJ info on someone else's time. But, all right, offensive tackle Allen Heron out of Maryland, you know, 6'6", 300-pound offensive tackle. He's actually from Jamaica. He played his high school football in Atlanta, started at D2 Shorter University, ended up at Maryland. Started all 22 games at Shorter, started all 24 games at Maryland, paid in 2025, played 760 snaps, only allowed 3 sacks. So, you know, big dude said his favorite pregame snack is fruit snacks with a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. So do with that information what you will. They guaranteed him a lot of money. The Saints have depth questions on the offensive line, at least at the tackle spots. Like they have entrenched starters in Fuaga and Banks, but there are backup roles to be won. So he's the type of guy who could potentially make the roster, not a high-end guy, but a developmental guy. And Jeremiah Wright is the guy they drafted on the interior. So I think they didn't add a tackle on the draft. So if there are UDFA, like there's not going to be a lot of UDFAs that make this roster, but offensive tackle, like a backup tackle, is one of the spots that you could potentially see a guy land there.
My big question is, you said peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Is it the sandwich or is it a crustable?
That's a good question. And my other question is he putting the fruit snacks in the sandwich? Because that would be weird. That's his pregame snack. So next up, Cody Hardy, tight end out of NC State, 6'4", 268. He's from Monroe, North Carolina. Played 4 seasons at Elon before transferring to NC State. You know, blocking guy. He's a blocking tight end option. This is not the year that I want to be a tight end, a UDFA tight end trying to make this roster. I think he's a guy who could compete for a practice squad spot. They do, you know, the three guys they have, right? The Juwan Johnson, Noah Fant, Oscar Delp. None of them are your traditional, like, oh, that's basically an H-back type blocker.
Right.
So I think there probably is a practice squad spot that you could dedicate to a true blocking tight end. We'll have to wait and see. But again, like, the tight end group this year is going to be real tough to crack for UDFA. So I think you're looking at practice squad at best. Alex Walschlager, offensive tackle out of Kentucky. This guy, 6'7", 310 pounds. Did you hear that, Steve? 6'7", 310-pound offensive tackle, Alex Walschlager. It's like a
Walschlager.
It's like an Andrews Pete-sized player there.
I like the name.
Started at Bowling Green, was at Bowling Green for 5 years, ended up transferring to Kentucky. So some that's where you're looking is guys who started at small schools, transferred to a major school, spent 1 year, developmental traits, size. So he's another guy. Again, offensive tackle is a position that I could see a UDFA maybe cracking at. So that's something to watch.
Walschlager sounds like a shot I need to take after this show.
It does. Goldschlager and Walschlager, yeah, you can get it. And unfortunately, they did not end up with Jaeger Burton, I believe, because that would have been fun. You could have a Jaeger bomb. And a Walschlager shot. Anyway, next, Michael Heldman, edge rusher out of Central Michigan, 6'4", 260. He's out of Romeo, Michigan. He spent all 5 seasons at Central Michigan. So one of the rare actually played his whole college career at a smaller school and didn't and didn't go somewhere as a mercenary for his final year probably hurt him at the end of the day. We'll have to see how things shape up at the edge rusher spot. You know, he was pretty productive. He had a school record 29 hurries at Central Michigan, 34 and a half tackles for a loss, 53 games, 42 starts, 120 tackles. So 19 sacks, 5 pass breakups, 4 forced fumbles. So a highly productive player. He'll be interesting, but I just don't know. Do you bring Cam Jordan back for like one last hurrah? Is there kind of a rotational spot to be won there for somebody? I think you're probably talking about a practice squad competition, but we'll have to wait and see. Jeremiah McClendon, cornerback out of Southern Illinois. One thing about Jeremiah, he's the youngest of 14 siblings. So, you know, they probably had some solid 7-on-7 games in the backyard. began his career at Marshall, also went to Charleston Southern, was at Florida International for a year, redshirted in 2023, and then ended up at Southern Illinois his last two seasons. Appeared in 19 games there, 12 starts, 60 tackles, 1 sack, 2 interceptions, 11 pass breakups. The Saints didn't do much in the defensive secondary in the draft. They did add TJ Hall, but special teams, depth cornerbacks, I think that's a spot that if I'm competing for a roster spot this year, that's a position I want to be at, because I think there are slots to be won. But like we were talking about with Mario earlier, wouldn't be surprised if there's a few more free agent additions. We only have 8 UDFAs right now. That means there are probably 1 or 2 spots that could go to a veteran free agent. Keyshawn Silver, defensive tackle out of USC, 6'4", 330. That's a big boy out of Rocky Mount, North Carolina. Started at UNC before transferring to Kentucky, and then spent his last season at USC. He appeared in 6 games with 4 tackles at North Carolina. Kentucky, played in 24 games, starting 23. He had 43 tackles in those 2 years. And then at USC, played in all 13 games, 20 tackles, 10 solo, 1 sack. Was a kind of regular contributor on the interior. He's a guy who will be in the mix. The Saints have a lot of bodies kind of mixing into the interior. You got Vernon Broughton coming back from last year's class, obviously Christian Miller, Brian Brzee, Devon Godshaw, Nathan Shepard. That's going to be a tough nut to crack. It'll be interesting to see how that rotation shapes up across it. Then Deshaun Jones, cornerback out of Alabama, 6'1", 190 out of Baltimore, Maryland. Started at Wake Forest from 2021 to 2023, then transferred to Alabama for his final 2 seasons. I'm all for getting these UDFAs out of major SEC programs. Like, truth, you know, low. That's a pretty high baseline type player. Again, just like McClendon, you know, there's spots to be won on this roster for cornerbacks. And then the final name we've gotten so far, Mason Shipley, kicker out of Texas. You know, he's got some good kicking bloodlines there. His twin brother Matthew kicked at Hawaii and Arkansas. His older brother Michael was a kicker at West Texas A&M. You know, just highly efficient, accurate kicker. His career long is 60, which is a Sun Belt record. That was at Texas State. You know, Charlie Smith is the kicker for this team. I would say it's his job to lose. But remember, if Charlie Smith had one of the worst starts to a training camp I've ever seen last year.
We also thought it was Blake Groupie's job to lose, and he lost it.
Well, he didn't lose it in camp. But right. It was Blake Groupie. Like, Charlie Smith, if he goes out there and starts this year's training camp like last year, then suddenly this becomes a conversation. And if you're Mason Shipley, your job is to go out there and be accurate and to force the Saints have as many awkward conversations about who our kicker is as possible. But right now, Charlie Smith is the guy coming in. And so Mason Shipley is most likely a camp leg, but we'll see how that goes. But that's the list so far out of UDFAs.
So when we get off today, you still got to be scouring everything and not even head out to the Jazz Fest and enjoy the rest of the sunny day.
Incorrect. I'll let the UDFAs happen to me. but I think this is pretty much the
list.
You're
going to be on the phone lines hitting agents up.
I don't think, I will probably check in with some of their agents, but I don't think you're going to see a lot more names. I think this is pretty much the list, maybe 1 or 2, and I would expect a veteran signing to come in or maybe a veteran tryout at rookie minicamp and maybe hold a roster spot for those guys.
Well, boys, we made it. 2026 draft completely now in the books for us. We've made it through the draft recap as well. For Coleman, Mario, Jeff, I'm Steve. Have a great one, folks. Up next, LSU baseball right here on WWL.
Hooray!